All right, good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday afternoon, May 4th, and we're down to the wire. It's our last 2 weeks. Yeah, craziness. And so it's going faster than I thought it was. And so we're going to modify what we're doing a little bit. We're going to do deals alder, but perhaps maybe not as deep as I would normally do deals alder, so that we can get to some of the other stuff that we've got going on. And so let me jump into it and show you where we left off. Let's see, screen share. Sometimes the screen share thing is taking a little longer to kick in than it normally does. I don't know what's up with that. All right, so today I'm going to talk more deals alder reaction. And the deals alder reaction looks like this. We have a molecule that we call a diene, and another one that we call a dienophile. Kind of interesting names for these things. The diene name makes sense, but the dienophile name is something that looks for dienes. And the electron flow is a concerted reaction mechanism where the electrons flow around to form a six-membered ring system. And we get one double bond resulting instead of the three that went into it. And so we make a cyclohexene. And it looks like, well, that's interesting. But there's not a whole lot to it. You just take the diene and the dienophile and you stick them together. And normally what they do is they react these with heat. But there's some interesting sort of things to talk about in terms of Diels-Alder reactions. They're actually quite fascinating. And there's a lot of chemistry underneath the Diels-Alder reaction that is going on. And it gets into molecular orbital theory, and there is selectivity to worry about. There's all kinds of things that are really cool with it. So let's start off by sort of looking at a couple of observations. Number one, first observation, that if you use 1,3-butadiene and you use ethylene and you react these with heat, that this thing is super slow to react. It's just a slow reaction. And so you really have to heat it quite a bit in order to get it to go. Conversely, if we take 1,3-butadiene and react it with this guy with an aldehyde on it, now we can do this in benzene as a solvent. And we heat it to about 100 degrees C. And it goes pretty easily. And by the other one saying that it goes slow, what I mean by the other one going slow is, I'm having trouble drawing, I apologize. Let's see. Just make the six-membered ring system. Don't fight it. Go back in, throw in the double bond, and then throw in the aldehyde. And if you're tracking where the bonds are going and how the electrons are flowing, the electrons are flowing this way such that the new bonds, let's highlight the new bonds here and here. So if we look at the older aldehyde and where it was and where the aldehyde carbons are located, you can see the aldehyde system. And if we're looking at where the diene system was, now we can see the diene system in there. So we just have it mapped out sort of color-wise. By this reaction being slow and by heating it, I mean that generally we're heating this thing somewhere around 200 degrees C in a quartz tube and doing it sort of in the gas phase. In order to be able to make that reaction go. So that reaction really doesn't want to go as drawn. However, when I draw it here with this thing with the aldehyde attached to it, it makes it go much faster. So much faster, easier reaction. So that aldehyde is doing something. And the question is, what is that aldehyde doing? Some other types of reactions. I can take analogs of that butadiene. I can put a methyl group on it. And I can take and use malic anhydride. As my dienophile. So these are all still working the same way. Diene to dienophile. Electrons are flowing in the same pattern. And this time, as I bring these together, and we'll map it out again, this reaction likewise is being done in benzene at 100 degrees. So it goes pretty easily. The product that I get out of this is one where I get the six-membered ring system. I get the double bond that I expect and the methyl group exactly where I expect it. But I get stereocenters here. And this wraps around into a bicyclic ring system. And because I've got the stereo system in the way that this goes together, it's plus and minus. So it's racemic in the way at which it forms. Again, we've got the two new bonds that we formed. We can look at where that diene system was in here and the dienophile. So we can track where everything's going in that system. Interestingly enough, when we do these reactions, the dienophile can look a little bit different, can be sort of different configurations. Here's one. So this one is a reaction with a dienophile that is an alkyne as opposed to an alkene. The reaction goes exactly the same. Electrons flow exactly the same. But because we started off with a triple bond rather than a double bond, what we end up with is a six-membered ring system that has two double bonds. And it still deals all the reaction. So that's kind of cool. Another example. Let's react with a carboxylic acid and an aromatic ring system. And in this time, this is looking too big. Let's shrink this down a little bit. This time when the reaction goes, We always line up the ends of the diene to the ends of the dienophile. Electrons again flow around the ring system. And when we make this product, I don't have solvent for this one, but we make the six-membered ring system. And the stereochemistry that is here, so this stereochemistry with cis, what we see is that it is cis on the ring system. So when the reagents start out cis, they end cis on the ring system, both being on the same side. The hydrogen groups on these would be back. And again, this would be plus minus. So when we can make stereocenters like this, we always end up with racemic. And if we start off the reaction with a trans double bond, the reaction proceeds exactly the same. We're going to make a new bond. I kind of missed that. I have to cut through. I have to cut through here to get to that carbon and through here. And the reaction proceeds like all the others. Except when I make this product, I started off with a trans and I end with a trans. And so there's lots of nuances within this reaction and understanding how this reaction works and what this reaction is actually doing. And how am I ending up with a cis and how am I ending up with a trans when I'm starting with these different geometries for these things? This is what's called stereospecificity. Or we would say stereospecific. That the reaction is stereospecific, but the geometry going in determines the geometry coming out, which is really interesting. Okay, so let's look at the reaction mechanism of how this thing actually goes together and what's actually happening when these reactions take place. The reaction mechanism When we look at the reaction mechanism, if we just pick something that makes it a little bit easier for us to see what's going on, let's pick the cis reaction that we were just looking at with the aromatic ring system. And look at this one a little bit more closely. First off, when these things come together, the way in which they come together is for the diene to be in a flat planar arrangement. You have the hydrogens which are attached to this thing, one sort of sticking in, the other one sticking out. And up above this, what aligns up above this is the diene and it comes over it in this flat sort of arrangement and sits right on top of it. So they're sitting one on top of the other, allowing the orbitals to line up and the electrons to then flow around this ring system. And as they flow around that ring system, it goes through a transition state. Let's see if I can draw. I should be able to do it this way. So what's happening is in that transition state, all of these double bonds are sort of in transition. And electrons are flowing from this bond to make that bond, from this one to make that guy, and from this one here to make that bond. And as they all come together in that reaction, they form the six-membered ring system in more or less a boat configuration. And because it's a concerted reaction mechanism, the two substituents wind up on the same side of the ring system. And they have to end up on the same side of the ring system because it's concerted. There's no time for rotation in the transition state. And while a boat configuration doesn't seem like it's that stable an orientation to land in, it very quickly rotates and goes back into sort of a chair conformation for the system. But both of these groups wind up on the same side of the ring system, just because of the way that it happens concerted. Okay. Same thing with the E in the way that the E system works out.
Jason, why is it mechanistically having the electron withdrawing group on the dienophile, it makes the reaction
faster? Glad you picked up on that, because what's on these, when we look at these systems and we look at all of these reactions that we've done, every single one of these reactions going back, and that was a great, this is one of the things that I want to do when I try to show all these examples, is I want you guys to pick up on those types of things that what we've done is we've put an aldehyde on here, and that speeds this reaction up. An aldehyde is an electron withdrawing group. So we have taken and we put an electron withdrawing group on here. That's excellent. This group is the same. Carbonyl, an electron withdrawing group, makes it go faster. Carbonyl, ester, electron withdrawing group, always on the dienophile, never on the diene. And then when we did put something on the diene, where is it? Here it is. We added onto the diene, we added an electron donating group. So why are we adding electron withdrawing groups to the dienophile and electron donating groups to the diene? What is actually happening here? So reaction theory wise, what's actually taking place is that when you look at the diene system and you look at the dienophile, this system has four orbitals in it. This system has two. But when we take and we put on an electron withdrawing group onto it, now all of a sudden it actually has four, just like the diene does. And I'm going to have to tilt this a little bit more in order to show sort of what's happening here. So we've got the diene and the dienophile. All right, let me take these guys and slide them over here. The traditional reaction without anything. Here, what we have is we have a series of orbitals where we have the pi system. And these are the pi molecular orbitals. These are the pi star. And these guys down here are occupied. and the upper ones are empty. This orbital is the LUMO, lowest unoccupied molecular orbital, and the HOMO. And the diene, when I look at the diene is going to be in sort of the same position, relatively. It's got two electrons. And this is its pi system and its pi star. And we have its HOMO and its LUMO. And what happens is the electrons are being transferred from the diene to the dienophile. And what we have to count on is we have to count on these electrons transferring into that pi star orbital. And in order to get them to transfer into the pi star orbital, I don't know why I can't make an arrow here, that'll be better. In order to get them to transfer into that pi star orbital, we have to heat this up really, really high because the energy difference between the HOMO and the LUMO is very little energy difference when there are no electron donating or withdrawing groups that are on this molecule. But take and put an electron withdrawing group on it, and what an electron withdrawing group does is it drags down the energy of the orbitals. So that now what happens is when I take this system that has an electron donating group put onto it in this position, that's not the only position that I can put it. There are other positions that will make it work. And this one, I have my electron withdrawing group. What it does is make a bigger difference between the HOMOs and the LUMOs of these molecules. And actually what I need to do is take and drop this even more. So here are the orbitals. And what the electron donating group does is the electron donating group shifts the energy of these up. And the electron withdrawing group, what it does is it shifts the energy of these down. And by shifting those energies around, what happens is it takes the electrons that are here and makes them higher in energy such that they flow downhill into a lower energy position into the LUMO. It makes a bigger energy band gap between the HOMO and the LUMO. Essentially what it does is it takes one of them and turns them into a nucleophile and turns the other into an electrophile. And so the electron withdrawing groups and donating groups aren't just random. The reason that they speed them up is because they make a bigger energy difference right here between these two orbitals. That allows that reaction to go forward. And so the stronger the electron withdrawing groups, the more it drops that LUMO orbital. And the stronger and better the electron donating groups, the higher it raises my HOMO orbital. And so that's what's really going on in the reaction. And that's why we use these electron withdrawing groups and electron donating groups. But now this actually even leads to a bigger question. The bigger question is, what if I take and do a reaction where, let's do this. Let's take cyclopentadiene, which doesn't look right. There we go. And react it with something that has just an aldehyde on it. Now, going through and doing this Diels-Alder reaction, there's two possible products that could come out of this, two ways that this could orient. One way that they could orient is for the is for the dying to be in this orientation, and for the aldehyde to have the hydrogen inside and the aldehyde outside, so that when this comes together, it comes together and it makes this product. The other way is for this molecule to turn itself around and for the aldehyde to go inside and the hydrogen to go outside. This one, large group outside, this one, large group inside. Now the aldehyde goes down and the hydrogen goes up. These two positions are given names. This one is called exo, and this one is called indo. And you can think of exo as being outside, being pointed towards the outside of the molecule, and endo being pointed towards inside the molecule as this thing goes forward and makes its bond. And literally what it's doing is, as this molecule here rides on top of this, it pushes these two groups down as the bond is made. So it pushes this group down and it pushes this group down. And as that happens, this group ends up in the downwards position, what we call the endo position. And the hydrogen winds up on the top of that, being the exo position. And it's transitioning from sp2 to sp3. So we're looking at an sp2 center turning into an sp3 center. And the same thing happened up here. But the question is, which one of these two is major, the exo or the endo? Any sort of feeling on which one of these should be major? AJ says the endo is major. Adriana says the endo is major.
I think exo, because it looks like you're putting the larger group in the equatorial type of position.
Well, there's no equatorial or axial in this case, because the way that the ring system is being formed, and it's a bicyclic ring system, there's not really an equatorial and axial, because we don't have a true six-member ring system and we don't have a true chair structure. So without a true chair structure, there's no axial or equatorial. So really it comes down to, where is the decision made? Is the decision made in the styrix, or is the decision made someplace else? And I'm seeing a lot of different answers. I'm seeing AJ and Adriana saying endo. I'd be curious to ask why they feel that way. Keegan says styrix would be the predicting determinant here. Styrix would argue against exo being favorable, because it would put the larger group towards the outside. And I think that's the same thing that Pokey is saying and that BB are saying.
Do the orbitals align easier when it's exo or endo?
That's a good question. So what is it that is actually allowing this reaction to take place, and what is it that plays into the transition state? So we want to know which is major, endo or exo. We get both, but one of them is clearly major and one of them is minor, and we need to understand what it is that's going on, that's happening in this. To understand that, we need to understand a little bit more about the symmetries that are taking place within these different orbitals. So let's do a little bit of orbital work first And then we can compare about how the orbitals actually align. So let's take the diene system. First off, the diene system has to be able to get into the pseudo cis conformation. If it can't obtain the pseudo cis conformation, then it won't go through a Diels-Alder reaction. So it has to react in this configuration or the reaction doesn't go. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we are interested in the different orbitals. And those orbitals we are going to refer to as psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, and psi 4. And we're interested, because this is going to be our nucleophile, we're most interested in the highest occupied molecular orbital, in the HOMO. That's the orbital that we really want to investigate. So this is going to be the critical orbital, but it would be good to understand, how do we look at the geometries of all of them? So what is it that these orbitals look like? When we take a pi system, the easiest way to understand the pi system is to take and build all of the p orbitals. You've got four. Take and put them together. And do that for all four of the orbitals. Okay, now I'm going to ask you to remember your orbital theory from Chem 1A and Chem 1B. That when we looked at the first time that we started talking about orbitals, we related them to a fixed string. And we said that a fixed string has a number of different energy levels with which it can vibrate. One of the energy levels is for it to vibrate in a mode where there are no nodes in it. And we call this sort of the zero mode, right? And then when we go to our second harmonic, the orbital can vibrate with one node. And each side kind of goes up and down, and we get the node in the middle. As you increase in energy each time, the increase in energy increases the number of nodes by one. So this would be the second harmonic, and it has two nodes. And then the third harmonic that would be here would be one where I have three nodes. Okay. And what they're doing is they're alternating. This is positive, positive and negative, positive, negative, positive, positive, negative, positive, negative. Okay. So how do I translate that into the wave function of my orbital? I'll use color, and let's use positive. Let's use red for positive. So everything that's colored in positive, we just color in red real quick. And that will be my positive color. Everything that is negative, I'll use blue. Actually, I'm messing that up. Take it back. I'm going to fix the bottom one in a second, because that one only has positive. Okay, so what I do when I go in and I color in these orbitals, the way I color in these orbitals is on the first psi one, all of the orbitals on top are red. And you'll see why I was making the mistake in a second here. And all the second phase is blue. On the second one, I pick two and two, and I give it one node so that I have introduced a node into the system. The node sits right here where the system arcs up and then down. In this one, I need two nodes. And so what I do is I color in the system and I start with red, and then I alternate two, and then I alternate one again. Although I need to change my colors, and I'll do that in a second. Actually, I'll do that now since I'm here. Now what I do is I alternate every other one. We'll discuss why I just changed colors in a second. Actually, why I changed colors is because I switched to unoccupied orbitals. And as such, unoccupied orbitals are green and yellow, as opposed to blue and red. But the phase is still the same. The yellow phase is positive, and the green phase is negative. Okay, so now I have all my orbital symmetries. I understand what my orbital symmetries are. And I understand that I am reacting at the highest occupied molecular orbital, psi 2. Psi 2 is what I'm interested in. So we lock in on this pattern right here. This is the pattern that we're going to work with for the diene. Now I need to do this exact same analysis for the dienophile. However, the picture doesn't change. The picture is identical for the dienophile. And the reason it is because what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick a dienophile that has the conjugated pi system and has four orbitals with it. And as such, having four orbitals, it also has the same psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, and psi 4. And I don't really need to draw all these out, because the image is exactly the same as what I've done here. What I need to ask is, this is my electrophile. Which orbital is it that I'm reacting with for my dienophile? Psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, or psi 4? Psi 3, it is the LUMO that is most important. That's the orbital that I'm reacting with. And that LUMO, bad orbital drawing. I'll just draw the LUMO orbital, and I won't draw all the rest. This orbital had this pattern. Okay, so that's the pattern that I'm going to use for that reaction. Now what I can do is I can go back and I can explore these two reactions using these orbitals to understand what actually happens. Okay, so now what we'll do is we'll take and we'll look at first exo. In the exo transition state, what I did is I started off, I'm gonna extend out the orbitals a little bit. That's a little bit better. Give me a little more room to work with. Okay, so I'm gonna superimpose the orbitals over this. There's the orbitals. And we said that this was psi 2. Doesn't matter where I start my coloring preference. I can start coloring anywhere I want. But what I need to do is I need to have it represented 2 up, 2 down. Start red anywhere you want on any end. I'm going to start red here. And I'll go 2 up. And I'll go 2 down. Everything else is blue. And like I said, it does not matter how you start. I could have started blue up and red down, and I would have arrived at the flip of this picture, but it's not going to make any difference. Okay, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take and put in the dienophile, and I'm going to make it exo. So there's my dienophile, and I'll put the orbitals on the dienophile. Okay, and these orbitals, what I'm going to do is I'm going to color these orbitals for this pattern which is the Psi 3 pattern. And I will start with one up, two down, next one up. And I start with a color that is going to match this phase. So I want these phases to match. So if I want these phases to match, then I'm going to pick green for my first color. And I'll do green one up, two down, one up. This is going to be Psi 3. This is the homo. This is the lumo. And then everything else gets yellow. Or because you can't really see yellow very well in this, I'm using orange. Okay, notice what happens is that these guys overlap color to color and phase to phase. And so the phase is overlapping perfectly. And where phase overlaps correctly, I get a bonding interaction. And that bonding interaction allows the reaction to go forward and make the chemical bond here between these two. So what I'm getting is I'm getting plus to plus and minus to minus. See how I've drawn them in? And these orbitals are aligning, and these orbitals are aligning, allowing me to make the bond. The reaction goes forward, and the hydrogen ends up down, and the aldehyde ends up up in the exo position. Now we seek to do the same thing with the endo to try to understand what's actually taking place. So now I want to slide this up because I want this actually on the same page. I don't know if I can crunch this anymore, but I don't need a whole lot. Just need that much. Okay. Now endo. Endo is essentially the same picture. I have the same orbitals. I just have a slightly different orientation. So I'll start by making sure that my image looks exactly the same as it does above. Okay, but now when I bring in the dienophile, now the dienophile needs to turn and change its orientation. This requires a little bit more careful drawing. So there's my dienophile. And I'm going to pull the dienophile out away from it a little bit. And then I'm going to draw in my orbitals where the orbitals go. And I think it's just that one. I want it a little bit bigger. And I'm going to start by looking at this interaction with this orbital here, and I'm going to start in the same place that I did before with green. I'm going to make this one green, and then I'm going to move around doing one up, two down. That's the wrong orbital. That's the second one down, this one up. And then everything else is orange. Okay, so now what happens is when I take this and slide this in, and I did not do a good enough job drawing it. I really need to extend out. That is really a hard thing to draw. Oh, because I'm going for the wrong thing. I want clarity of image, and that's not going to get it for me. I'm going to turn it around to make it a little clearer. I apologize. I know you guys are trying to keep up with me and taking notes. I'm going to turn it around this way. Which doesn't affect anything other than is going to make my image more clear. And you will appreciate it when we actually get to the important part. Okay, get back in there. Okay, so here's what happens. Orbitals. There's all my orbitals. I am trying to align this one now, red, with this one. So I'm gonna need to start orange, one up, two down, next one up. And then greens. Okay, so it is going negative, positive, positive, negative, positive, negative, negative. Watch what happens. When this goes inside, look at the lineup. Do you see how many of the orbitals are overlapping that are supposed to be positive? Can't hit all of that. I can switch that without changing its color. I did the positives and negatives wrong, but the colors were right. Now we're better. When I move this over, do you see how positive goes to positive, negative goes to negative, negative goes to negative? So what I'll do is I'll just leave it kind of below here, like this. And what is happening is that as they react, they're reacting in these orbitals. That then, when they bond, gives me this one where the aldehyde is down and the hydrogen is up, and this is endo. How many favorable interactions do I have in exo? How many orbitals are overlapping in exo? Just the two orbitals are overlapping in exo. How many orbitals are overlapping in endo? Three, when the orbitals overlap, think about it like Velcro. When orbitals overlap and orbitals have the same phase, they do constructive interference, and there is a positive attractive force between orbitals of like phase overlapping with each other. And so these two orbital overlaps are the attractive forces. When I come down here and I look at the three orbital overlap, this gives me more attractive forces. This lowers the activation energy for the reaction. And it makes this one major. And it's because of those three orbital overlaps. As composed to the two. And so what happens here is it's not sterics. It's electronics that are governing the Diels-Alder reaction. And while it seems like there may be an increase in sterics by favoring the endo product, remember that these systems are flat and planar. And because they're both flat and planar, there are no sterics. And so it's about the electronic nature of these reactions that are governing it rather than the steric reactions that are governing it.
So this is applicable to all of the reactions that are going to be like, that we'll look at. They're all going to have major products that are endo for this section.
That's right.
Cool.
For the Diels-Alder reactions, the favored products are endo products. That's exactly right. In some cases, it's very hard to distinguish, Abby, between an endo and an exo. The only reason we're able to do it here is because we're making a bicyclic ring system. And unless you make a bicyclic ring system, it's very difficult to distinguish between endo or exo. But the fact is they all do go endo. You just may not be able to tell endo from exo in the product, unless it's making a bicyclic ring system. So what we see is that when we react these together, if we were to do it this way, one way to think about it is that those would be endo and these guys would be exo. And that as they come together to make that bicyclic ring system. Did I get the double bond in the back? I did. And as we make that bicyclic ring system, we get exo, endo, exo, and endo. And the endo is major for the electron withdrawing group, which is usually a carbonyl. Because we're using the electron withdrawing group. And by major, if we take and look at this guy reacting with the aldehyde.
Hey, Jason.
It froze.
Yeah.
Thanks. Come on, click in. Okay, so if we take these two and react these two together, the major product is the endo product. And it's major by 90%. So it's not just a little major. It's not like we're talking 60-40. We're talking like 90%. And still, be careful because this is still racemic. It's still plus minus. How can we have plus minus and still be endo? Because the other plus minus component of this, if you remember your stereochemistry, oh, come on, move over. If I want to draw the mirror image of this, the easiest way to draw the mirror image is to take and draw it as a mirror image. And that means that if I were to swing this around, the other enantiomer of this has the aldehyde down just on the back carbon. And those two would be enantiomers. And that's where the plus minus is coming from. So how do I get it on the backside and down like that? Well, the answer is that one of them, I guess this just takes a second to show you, one of them, the reaction is where the aldehyde is on this side, going that way. And the other one is where the aldehyde is on top, which comes out with something that is not easy for me to draw. There, I guess that's good. And so this is diene top, diene bottom. And that's what makes plus minus. So that's where the plus minus is coming from. All right. That is awesome. We did a whole lot of work there. Let me ask you about another problem. Let's look at regioselectivity real quick. So we've looked at stereoselectivity and the preference for endo, but regioselectivity is different. Regioselectivity is asking the question, if I have a diene that has a specific geometry to it, and I react it with a dienophile, how is it going to go together? Is it going to go together this way? Where the aldehyde is here, or is it going to go together where the aldehyde is next to the TMS group? And so where is the aldehyde going to go . This is regioselectivity, because you're looking at this thing reacting up and down this way with the aldehyde on top, or flipping it upside down and reacting with the aldehyde down on the bottom in order to get it in this orientation. And yet we still haven't addressed the stereochemistry, that I have two stereocenters here and I need to figure out sort of what the stereochemistry is going to be of these. It's going to be endo. We know that this guy will go endo. We'll have to figure out what that is, but we also need to worry about this. First off, regioselectivity. How do I decide which orbital goes where? What is it that an electron withdrawing group does?
Should be whatever like stabilizes the transition state.
I think I want more so, what does it do to the orbitals? What does it do? Well, let's look at it this way. Let's take this aldehyde and let's ask the question about this aldehyde. So in this aldehyde, what we normally do, or what we did before, let me draw it flat, is we took the aldehyde and we drew it kind of this way and more in a flat sort of sense so that I could look at the orbitals, right? And I drew all the orbitals the same size. But in reality, what we know is that the aldehyde is an electron withdrawing group. And so what's happening is this thing is sucking up electron density. And we can draw some resonance contributors for this thing, even though it's neutral. I can draw resonance contributors where I can take and make a negative and a positive, and I can shift the electrons over one more time, and I can make a negative and a positive, and I could look at the neutral resonance associated with this aldehyde. Okay, and we also know that it's important that I'm looking at psi three and that I'm looking at the lowest unoccupied molecular orbital. I'm looking at where the positive density is. I'm looking at where the partial positives are in this molecule. So when I take a look at this molecule, what I'm looking at literally is I'm looking at where there are partial positives within this molecule, and there are two locations where there are partial positives, right? And because I'm looking at the empty orbital, I'm looking at where the partial positive is the greatest. And the orbitals are not all equal in size. When you have a molecule that has more partial positive in one location than another, the orbital over the partial positive is greater for its LUMO. It has a larger orbital coefficient at the positive location. That means that when I draw the orbitals for this thing, I draw them this way. I draw this orbital large and these orbitals smaller because I'm looking at where the positive charge is within this thing. So essentially what I'm seeing is that the largest orbital coefficient is on the terminal end where the partial positive charge is. And that's where my largest orbital coefficient is.
Hey, Jason, that's just kind of, could you just help me like understand? Because it's just kind of conflicting because we always talked about the carbon attached to the carbonyl like being the, you know, like most partially positive, and so that's why it's always been like the reaction center, you know, like that's been the electrophilic center,
right? And
we're kind of assigning like a bigger partial positive to like not that carbon.
What am I missing? Yeah, do you remember the conversation that we had, soft like soft, hard like hard?
Yes.
Do you remember what it was that made things soft and made things hard? So we said that when we had delocalization, that the delocalization center here, this was the soft position and this was the hard position?
Yeah.
Okay. So I would agree that there probably is a larger orbital that is over this guy here. But the problem with that is that this is not going to be a bonding orbital in my Diels-Alder reaction. The Diels-Alder reaction is happening between these two. And the reason it can't happen here is because the oxygen can't make three bonds in order to be part of the Diels-Alder reaction. And so I can only really consider the orbitals that are going into these guys. And so I'm focusing mainly on that orbital and saying, this is where my partial positive is. And that orbital there does not get partial positive.
Okay. Okay, sweet. That works.
Cool. Okay. Now we need to do the same for the dienophile or for the diene. We just did the dienophile. Now we need to do this guy, and we need to understand the nature of this guy and what this is doing. Now this has electron donating groups on it. So now when I look at this one, I'm going to do the same analysis, but I'm going to do it from the prospect of these are electron donating groups, and I'm going to look at the electron donating resonance, and I want to find the partial negative. So push the electrons to find the partial negative. Push in, push down, push out. The partial negative resides on that carbon, and that is going to have the largest orbital on it. Do the same for the other oxygen. See where it goes for the other oxygen. It should go the same location. And it does. The two oxygens are pushing negative charge to the same carbon. And that means that that carbon is going to bear the largest orbital. And so if I take, I need to redo that, I need to do it flat. Delete, do it flat. There's my big orbital. There's my partial minus. That means that this one is going to be my blue and blue. I got to catch blue on the backside of that guy. And then reds. Okay, so now what happens is, without worrying about the orbitals, I mean, I can do it from the orbitals, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this guy and I'm going to orient it large orbital to large orbital. I'm essentially aligning the partial positives to the partial minus. So what I do, another way to think about this without having to do the orbitals every time, is to do it this way. I wanted you to see it because I'm aligning large orbitals to large orbitals. I'm taking and I'm finding the partial minus. And I'm finding the partial positive. And I'm aligning those partial minus to partial positive. And I'm aligning endo. Now I can go through and I can do the reaction. And as I do the reaction, now I can track where everything goes. I still haven't tracked stereochemistry exactly. I'm still going to have to do the stereochemistry. But at least I know, nope, I just did that wrong. At least I know how my group aligns. And now what we need to do Now we got to do the stereochemistry. So to do the stereochemistry, we just line it up and we look at how it reacts endo and what the final product is going to look like. So what I would recommend doing for this is drawing it out flat, including each of the groups. Hydrogens two for those guys. This group back here stays sp2, and so that one's not so critical. The other thing is we're going to orient this guy endo and the hydrogen outside, and I'm going partial positive to partial minus. I'm orienting and reacting. That carbon to that carbon. partial minus to partial positive. And as they come together, it's going to make that endo product, but now I can track all of the stereocenters and see what happens. Now, as these hydrogens react, the hydrogens roll back out of the way as these two centers become sp2 hybridized, become sp3 hybridized from sp2. So what happens is, as the bond is made, it pushes these guys up out of the way and these guys roll back a little bit, so that as it goes into its product, it's going to look like this.
Did you mean to draw the partial positive by the OTMS?
I meant that to be a partial minus.
Okay, good. I'm like, uh-oh.
No, you're good. Thank you. I caught the partial positive here, but I guess I was still sort of like making a partial positive when I drew that one. Okay, so this is how it's reacting. The hydrogen gets pushed up. The O methyl gets rolled back. The aldehyde is in the endo position. The hydrogen in the exo position. And we don't need to worry about these hydrogens or these hydrogens because they're both hydrogens, so there's no stereocenter there to track. And so what we get out of this is, when we flatten this thing out, we actually get this. That group is back. And that group is back. And because we can swap positions and we can put the diene on top, we also get plus minus. And it's racemic. So that means that this reaction is both stereospecific and regiospecific. And out of the 8 possible products that we can form, 16, only here we created 2 stereocenters. So with 2 stereocenters, there's a possibility that we could have created 4 products. We get 2 out of those 4 in this system. And even though those look like they might be sterically prohibitive of forming, because they formed coming from flat systems that had no sterics involved in the transition state, it's governed all by the electronics. And the electronics are making it regioselective and stereoselective. Keegan, hope this gets easier with time. I hear you. JC, same thing, 45% there. It does, because it's not, while I've used orbitals in order to explain it all, and I wanted you to know where the orbitals were coming into it, you don't need the orbitals to exactly do it. Watch this. What we can do is we can take and make this a little bit easier. Let's do A, B, B, A. Let's call both of these Z. And then let's do endo and exo. And endo and exo. And just for the sake of argument, let's say that A up here, that this A is my electron donating group. And let's say that this endo group is my electron withdrawing group. What that does is that sets up that my electron donating group makes this my partial minus, and my electron withdrawing group makes this my partial positive. I'm going to change this to blue to be consistent. Okay, so they always go partial minus to partial positive, and I get a preference for endo. So following this model, if all I do is align this model, then they always react this way. And this is all you need to do is refer back to the model. So I'm going to get a six-membered ring product, double bond here. Each of these guys are Z. A is going to go back. B is going to come forward. Endo is going to go back. And exo is going to come forward. That is true on the bottom as well. And we will pick and catch this group, which was helping to decide. That was my electron withdrawing group. And we'll catch A, that was my electron donating group. Okay. And I always get plus minus. That's your model. And so now we could take any reaction and put any reaction into this context, and we can figure out exactly what the product is going to look like. So it makes it just a lot easier. It gives you a model to work from, but you also inherently understand where that model comes from, even if you couldn't reproduce it from first principles. So the concept here is not maybe that you don't need to reproduce it from first principles, but you understand that it was the orbitals and the orbital overlap and the partial positives and partial minuses that were aligning. But now you have a model that takes all of that into account and allows you to be able to come out with the product. And so we could look at a couple of different reactions, or one reaction, since we don't have a whole ton of time. And let's do this. Let me give you a reaction. And I want to have these two react, and I want to do the Diels-Alder product. So what I do is I look at the different groups, and I know that on this one, I'm looking at electron donating groups, and that is my nitrogen. And I can use the electrons to push in and push out just following resonance. This is going to give me my partial minus. Bromine is an inductive withdrawer, but a resonance donator. And if I figure it as a resonance donator, it's going to push, push, and push to the same location. But nitrogen is much stronger. So I'm going to really take a look at where the nitrogen is pushing. That's giving me my partial minus. The oxygen here is an electron withdrawing group. So it's going to pull electron density, and I just fish it out to its ultimate end. I take my positive charge and align it with my negative charge, so that these guys are going to align together. And I'm going to take whatever it is that has the pi system, and I'm going to put the pi system endo. The methyl group is going to go exo because it doesn't have any orbitals on it to overlap, to glue, to hold it together. So that means that I'm looking at this model that is right here, and I'm taking my electron donating group, this time the nitrogen, which is really the donating group, but that's going to be in a Z position. I'm just looking at the partial minus. And this group is going to go endo, and this group is going to be where A is. And I'm just going to draw this like this and decide on each group. So the nitrogen stays here, its position doesn't change. The bromine is in the position of the A, so that's going to go back. So the bromine is going to go back. If I want to, I can add in the hydrogen. The hydrogen is going to be the thing that's coming forward. So I could show that if I wanted to. and maybe that helps. And then I have these two groups. Those two groups are going to be on this carbon here. And this group is going to go endo, the pi system. So endo goes back. So the back is going to be the aldehyde. And the front, exo, is the CH3 group. And then I conclude it by writing plus minus. Oh, Keegan, it's so funny you say that. Keegan's comment is, I don't envy grading those on an exam. Yeah, because everybody twists everything around. And it's a nightmare trying to see what you guys are doing. That's true. And that's okay. I'm well practiced at it. I can see them as you're drawing them and figure it out what you're doing. But that's the whole system. And I've got a bunch of these for us to practice on. And I actually have a co-op for deals all the reactions with even more problems. So we'll do a bunch of these in lab, and we'll make a lot more sense out of it. We'll get a lot of practice out of it. Okay. Did that like take a little bit of the jitters off? I mean, maybe take it from 45% to maybe 60%, hopefully. And then we'll work from 60% and we'll try to get it up from there. I know it's always, every time it's new in that first lecture, it's always hard in that first lecture. So we'll get there. We'll get there together. Okay. That's as much as I want to do with Diels-Alder systems. We'll just spend one day on Diels-Alder and I'll see how much I want to do with the cycloadditions. The cycloadditions really are not that common and you don't see them commonly within most of the other undergraduate textbooks and things. It's more common to see the carbonyl stuff and I want to get into carbonyl chemistry. So I might even just ditch the rest of the cycloadditions and just jump into carbonyl chemistry because that's more along the lines of the biological stuff and things that people find more fascinating anyway. I find the cycloadditions fascinating. I think that they're really fun, but the carbonyl chemistry is much more practical and much more useful for the majority of people. So I think that that's where we'll go next. All right. 2:04. I've got a few minutes over. I think that's everything I want to hit, but I'm happy to stay and answer questions. I know that I probably initiated a lot of questions there, but it was also like a fire hose of information. So I totally get questions may come later. I understand. So I'm going to stop the recording and I'll hang on the line. And if anybody wants to ask anything, I'll stick around for a little bit. And if not, I'll see you guys at 3:00 for the afternoon lab.
Thank you.
You're welcome.